Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. It's been a while since I've spoken to Northumberland Peterborough South MPP David Pacini. With all his responsibilities as Minister of Environment, Conservation and Parks, plus the work he does locally, he is hard to pin down. But finally, we got a chance to chat. A lot has gone on. There is the opening of new parks and the release of 7,400 acres of greenbelt for development. Locally, there is the minister's zoning order to allow a long-term care home to be constructed in Port Hope. In fact, the list is quite long. In this interview, you will learn all about this and more. It is my great pleasure to welcome back Northumberland Peterborough South MPP David Pacini to Consider This Northumberland. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Great to sit down with you today.
As Minister of the Environment, some people might think part of your portfolio would be to protect environmentally important lands. Yet back in November, the government decided to open up 7,400 acres of the Greenbelt for development. Now, as I'm sure you're well aware of, there are people who are not happy with this. And some people might argue that it's difficult to find your voice speaking out about protecting clean water or mitigating flood risk or ensuring homes for wildlife. There's a story just today, Global News is breaking about long list of endangered species in these areas that are slotted to be for development. And I want to know, why is that? You know, as Minister of the Environment, you know, were you consulted on these policies, and what do you have to say about that?
Well, of course, I think it's first important. We can't be comparing apples to oranges. I mentioned 500,000 acres in protection, and we're talking about 7,400. So I think just in terms of sheer size and magnitude, it warrants a proper comparator on truly the size and scope of what we're talking about. And I would also add that, you know, important to preface to what you'd mentioned there, that it's an expansion of the Greenbelt, an additional 2,000 acres that the government's doing. I think, look, Rob, governments of all stripes, this isn't unique to this government, have grappled with how you grow protection and grow Ontario. And I think, I also heard this morning on the news, we were talking about immigration coming into Canada, which is a good thing. We need it. Interestingly, I think it was Scott Reed, actually, former advisor to Kathleen Wynne, noted when the federal government contemplates immigration, which we welcome, it should come with it some dollars and cents to build the infrastructure for the areas in which immigrants go. And we know disproportionately, like, we're not talking 50%, we're talking like 70 to 85% are coming into Ontario within the GTHA. So we have to support a growing Ontario. We've got a number of help wanted signs everywhere in major manufacturers, and we've got to support a growing Ontario in the GTHA. Looking at that piece, I mentioned we've grown significant protected areas within a Southern Ontario sphere. And the Greenbelt itself, if you look at a lot of the areas that have been contemplated, many of these areas are fully serviced. Many are right beside major transit or transportation corridors. And it makes sense, because if you're not looking at intensifying there, you're looking where? Further north? You're looking into what? Areas like the Oak Ridges Moraine? And I know we don't want to do that. So I think you have to look at these areas and certain trade-offs. As I said, previous government did do that when they carved into the Greenbelt 17 times for various land trade-offs. Now, they did it for things like a golf course and Jiffy Lube, among other things. We have scoped it narrowly to housing. And I think that's a policy decision that governments duly elected are able to make. And we've scoped ours for housing. And I think, you know, everybody knows we're in a housing crisis.
These lands were put aside for a very specific reason, to protect the watershed. As Environment Minister, can you assure us that you know, we're going to have enough water for all these people to drink?
Well, what I can tell you is my greatest concern as Environment Minister when it comes to drinking water are septic systems and areas in more rural and remote areas of Ontario. That is where any expert who's certainly advised me would tell you, you know, Ontario needs to focus on. Furthermore, they would also tell you that it's aging infrastructure and various bypass overflows like we saw in Chateau Creek and Hamilton that pose a significant concern. That's not at all to minimize what you've said at all, but that's just what I have heard in my experience as Environment Minister from experts, and why we're investing in, you know, rural and remote communities, improving aging infrastructure. I think to our community, recent announcements in Cobourg, in Durham region, the Newcastle plant discharging into Lake Ontario. Places like Dufferin's, you know, have their policy one discharge receiver are among, if not the best, among the best on Lake Ontario Basin. So it's important that people have confidence in their drinking water systems, especially when backed up by qualified professionals, engineers and experts and incredible workers that operate these systems. We're investing in constant improvements and expansion to deal with aging infrastructure and to build new infrastructure to support drinking water systems for tomorrow's Ontarians. To do the sort of infrastructure to protect our watersheds that we need to do with increasing extreme weather events, that you have to layer it with all three levels of government.
I want to talk to you about the Southbridge development in Port Hope. Where do you stand on this development and why?
We're in a housing crisis, as I mentioned, in Ontario, which includes long-term care. We have thousands of people on the waiting list. And I support, you know, getting this home built. The existing home is near the end of its lifespan. We need a suitable home, modern and safe space for people to age in place. We have been talking about this, Rob, for 7 years now. 7 years we've been talking. And we've been, you know, that's not to say any one side has clean hands on this. I'm just saying the facts are, at my level, the province, I made a commitment for healthcare, and I made a commitment to build 30,000 long-term care spots. And 7 years later, I don't see anything that's changed here in Port Hope. We have private land that they're looking to develop a modern and safe space on. They have licensed beds that they're not operating because it is this government that has said you need modern HVAC. It's this government that said we're not going to cram four seniors to a room. Again, previous governments could have done that. They didn't. We did. So we have doubled the number of inspectors.
Okay. So all of those things make a lot of sense.
For all those reasons, we got to get this done.
I appreciate that. But issuing a minister's zoning order is a big stick to wield. Why was it necessary in your mind to go that far? This is a new council. They've only been elected a couple of months. They really didn't have a chance to kind of sit down and roll up their sleeves on it. Why was it important to take that MZO and push that through as the mechanism?
Well, I would ask back to you, Rob, what happened in the last two councils that would lead you to believe that anything different would happen here? 7 years, Rob, that this has gone back and forth. And, you know, respectfully, we've all been elected. So I think I've heard a lot of back and forth on democracy and this and that. I don't think that's helpful. I mean, I don't think tallying up the number of votes I got in Port Hope and comparing it to the number of votes that councillors got, you know, I know who's received more votes if we're going to truly compare. I don't think that's helpful to this dialogue. I think the province are using tools that we have to stay true to a commitment we made. We were very clear to Ontarians. We said, we're going to do this. If you reelect us, we're going to do it. We've used ministerial zoning orders to build hospitals and long-term care beds before the election. So it's not like this is a new tool. If Ontarians, you know, didn't want the province to use every tool in their toolkit to get hospitals built, long-term care built, and affordable housing built, they wouldn't have reelected us.
All right, so fair enough. But what message does this send to other municipalities in Northumberland? I mean, there's the Lakeport Beach development in Alnwick-Haldimand. There's the condos and on Elgin Street in Brighton. I mean, what message are you sending there? Should they be worried? Should they be concerned?
Well, I think, you know, it's important to note that that these MZOs that in this instance here is used, scoped on the crisis we are in healthcare. You know, I've been very clear on other developments in our community. All of those require the consent of council in the application of this MZO and others where we've moved them forward without the consent of, you know, of council, without the vote requesting it from council, have been scoped uniquely to the healthcare crisis that we're in. And, you know, again, I would say, Rob, I think this is not where I'm sitting down with you saying, you know, we haven't had anything happen in the last few years that have shown us. We've had the pandemic that's shown us the systemic failures of how we care for seniors. So that is the moral imperative. That is the backdrop I'm in. Furthermore, Rob, we're not sitting here with a stabilized wait list where we're not in crisis. We are sitting here, Rob, right now. And if we want to call Susan Walsh up at NHH and ask her, Susan, what percentage of your acute care beds today are occupied by what's called ALC, alternate level of care patients? They'll tell you over 30%. Sometimes it's gotten as high as 40, 50%. What that means, and we all have to be very clear with the people, if you get hit in a car accident, if your loved one suddenly has a cardiac arrest or a condition, X percent of those beds, acute care beds that they would go to, are already occupied by people who don't require that acute care service. They're alternate level of care patients who would be better cared for in LTC. There's a wait list. There's that reality. These are the imperatives. I don't have the time, respectfully, to continue for another 7 years discussing this, Rob. We have an imperative to get modern and safe spaces done today. Are the proponents we deal with nationally accredited? Yes. Do they have to meet rigorous design standards and processes with the ministries? Yes. Have we doubled the number of inspectors and taken every measure? And I'm open to suggestions on ways to staff these buildings. Yes. Free PSW training, the largest expansion in nursing seats in Ontario's history. We've done all of that to address this. But I do think somebody's got to stand here and say, I never heard anyone say, we are in a crisis and we have to address this. And so I don't have the luxury of waiting another 7 years. We have an aging population that deserve modern and safe spaces. So we have an imperative to act as the province, given healthcare is our responsibility.
So let's move on. Talk about some other things. A couple of months ago, there was a huge debate over harm reduction for people struggling with addictions, drug addictions in Northumberland. I would like to start with your thoughts on harm reduction in our community. How would you tackle the opioid crisis we face in Northumberland?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think there's you and I could speak for a set hour just on this topic. So honestly, I don't think anything I say will do justice to the long discussion that this topic warrants. Having said that, I will say, you know, our roadmap to wellness that the province has committed with a significant investment is an important first step. We've had very focused discussions locally. We recently had the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions down, who's completing his PhD in this subject, very passionate about this, to talk about, you know, how do we go upstream and target youth? Well, you do it through investing in programs like the province has invested in, working with Rebound and our police service, you know, that I announced, I think it was 2 years ago now, targeting youth. You do it through increase mental health and wellness within schools, building resiliency in K-12, but also recognizing that creating a silo within the education system in and of itself isn't an answer. You have to embed community supports because you know, Rob, that it's not just during the school day where you put your hand up and say, I have an issue. In fact, it probably is more acute in evenings, at night, And so building those community supports and overlapping it is key. I'm a big believer in detox and wraparound supports. I'm not a supporter and was very clear on the record of as well intentioned as they may be, a solution that bypasses both a provincial process, municipal bylaws, and just says it's okay to come and be supplied with drugs here or there. But I think what you're hearing from community members is an exasperation on, we've got to tackle this. We've got to work with youth. I think the idea of supply and making it readily available, I look to areas of North America where that's happened in greatest extent, and respectfully, it has failed. It has led to entire areas where we have not done well by these people, where criminals have embedded themselves in areas like East Hastings in Vancouver, San Francisco, other communities. And so in our rural community, I think we have an opportunity here to work with service providers. Ontario Health Team Northumberland is building local solutions to this. They've put forward some proposals that involve increased help for youth wellness, and a number of other ideas that I'm working with them on now. So I value that. I mean, I get my marching orders from those players in our community who deal with it on the front line and Northumberland Hills hospitals, Rebound, police, sadly, who often do end up dealing with this as well. We've embedded MHART, so clinicians in with police officers, recognizing that we leave policing for police, but the mental health is better dealt with a clinician. So I've sort of given you a myriad of things, Rob, yeah. None of which does justice to the topic.
No, I appreciate that. And
it's very serious.
And we've only got a limited amount of time. Yeah. Pretty quickly, though, have you you mentioned a lot of people that you've talked to. What about Greenwood Coalition? What about frontline workers? What about people with lived experience? Have you talked to those people as well?
Yeah, I have. I've been down in Cobourg and Port Hope, where it's most poignant within our Northumberland community, to speak with a number of people with lived experiences. I have not spoken with Greenwood Coalition recently, but have spoken with workers on the front lines. In fact, I was on one of the MHART ride-alongs, within the last year to see firsthand, and I've spoken with a young woman, for example, in Cobourg, who I know from speaking with police had been, an individual that they had frequent encounters with, who is now stabilized, had wraparound supports, was supported, and receiving the supports that they need. And so it's programs like that are working. This sort of MHART programs never existed when I was first elected. They are in place here in our community now. Community paramedicine as well, which is a big been a big support to being supported in place. I've had these conversations. I was recently at St. Peter's for an announcement, and I know they stood up in a big way in response to the housing and homelessness issue in Cobourg. And I spoke to a number of folks there and who are dealing with it, the volunteers. I don't think there's any one silver bullet, Rob. If there was, we would have used it by now. But what I do say is that government alone will not be the answer. You have to bring in community and you have to listen to the community. So having those conversations with, faith-based groups and others is important as well.
Any news on what's happening with the old Brookside Youth Center on King Street in Cobourg?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when Cobourg first put their hand up just prior to the last provincial election to say we have an interest, it paused the disposition process from a provincial standpoint, meaning we will let the municipal partner take as long as they'd like. Obviously, it's not a forever, but excuse me, take time to work with Infrastructure Ontario on scoping out what is needed, doing a site assessment, assessing what's there, what needs to be further remediated, costs that the province incurs, and essentially brokering a deal. Since then, Cobourg has looped in Northumberland County as well to be a part of that discussion. Northumberland County has put their hand up as the social services system provider for the province within our community. I think it's important and the right move to have them there. Actually, meeting with the CAO Coburg and a number of representatives, I believe it's next week, to get an update on where they're at. Where I can be most helpful here as MPP going forward is, you know, as I've heard from the county, where they might say, Dave, you know, we'd like to do X, Y, and Z. Your provincial IO civil servants have said they're looking for this, but really we want to do that. That's where I get involved, bring in the minister, which I have done, and said, look, you know, how can we better be responsive to what the community's articulated here? And so that's sort of been my interactions to date. I've also said, you know, we have a workforce housing issue as well. So, you know, seeing local providers, I got to say, you know, when you hear from the development and building sector, it is important to have them at the table. And I really like hearing from progressive players like Stallwood, for example, who are actually articulating the workforce housing crisis that we're in, saying we need to do a better job at building housing for our workforce, be it a Leuna employee, be it someone who's on the front lines of the automotive renaissance we're seeing right now working at CPK or General Motors. So, you know, that's where we're at today, where they're articulating a formal proposal. It is my full hope that a deal is reached, and that this land transfers hands into either one or a multitude of community groups that come together with the upper or lower tier to put forward a proposal that's going to work for our community. And, you know, I'm going to continue to be a supportive advocate throughout that process until we reach a deal. If one is not reached, just as a process clarification, Rob, then it would go to open market after that. But not until both sides either walk away or in our instance, hopefully they'll reach a deal. And I have no reason to believe that things aren't moving well.
Going forward, what can we expect over the upcoming weeks?
Well, we've got a good conversation coming up on Brookside. I don't know if you're looking broader. I think in the coming weeks, I have challenged our lower tier municipalities to come up with, to respond to the province's job site challenge in identifying land. I mean, you spoke, Rob, earlier about the community and planning and where we're at. I think it bears asking the question. The province said we're going to dispose of lands that we deem surplus. How many municipalities have done the same thing in an articulated manner to say, hey, we've got surplus property, be it unassumed road access that could easily fit a triplex or a laneway home? We see them in Toronto now. Or we've got land. I mean, I think the bigger concern of mine is in some of my discussions, we've got municipalities who don't even know what land they own. Like they haven't even answered that question before we start, how do we dispose of surplus? And then in terms of long-term planning, where is the industrial park of tomorrow? Where are we going to have job creators situate? You know, like some of the EV players that we've seen in St. Thomas, Stellantis, and Windsor. So I've challenged our municipalities. I'm pleased to say they have jumped to this challenge and are working actively with me and my office and identifying those areas. As you said, I mean, it's about long-term planning. It's about the community looking forward and saying, where are we going to live? Where are we going to work? And I think if you polled the majority in Northumberland, they'd say, we don't want to drive. We don't want to be mercy to train 651 via rail. We'd rather live, work, and raise a family within our own community. And so I think, you know, it is my responsibility to try and create that competitive climate to attract the investments. But what everybody's saying, Banneco Packaging, Premier Tech, CPK, and others, is where are they going to live in our community? Because we don't have the housing. So for me, in the weeks and months ahead, this is what we're laser focused on, working with municipalities to develop their own surplus plan of action. To dispose of surplus properties, intensifying our housing as well, which means, you know, providing long-term care within an urban setting, not just shipping, as some have suggested, north of the 401, you know, doing it within the urban boundaries so that people can age in place and that people can live within the urban boundaries of our communities and hopefully work as well.
Before we end the interview, I want to take a moment to recognize that my time is limited and I could talk to you forever. And you have been extraordinarily generous today, giving me the time that you have. If listeners are interested in learning more about what David Pacini is up to, you can hear him talk about a host of topics on his regular show called Pacini from the Park. It airs regularly on Northumberland 89.7 FM. There's also an archive of all the previous shows on the station's website at northumberland897.ca. So knock yourself out. David Pacini, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks very much for giving me this opportunity, Rob. I really appreciate the questions and how we were able to dance around on so many topics. And I know for listeners that, you know, even an hour doesn't do it justice, half an hour. So I'm always open, either, as you mentioned, like Pacini from the Park, or if they want to reach out to my office or pop by, I'm always open as well.
Thanks again. That was David Pacini, MPP for Northumberland Peterborough South.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.